Greetings and good morning. It's 8 o'clock. This is Eric Gould with news for the KVNF listening area for Tuesday, May 15th. A bill to legalize civil unions in Colorado already appears to be dead at the state capitol, where lawmakers have convened for a special legislative session. Governor John Hickenlooper called for the session last week in an attempt to revive the stalled bill and a host of others that had garnered bipartisan support during the regular session. KUNC's Kirk Sigler reports from the state capitol.
Republican House Speaker Frank McNulty gaveled in the special session this morning.
I hereby call to order the House of Representatives for the first extraordinary
session. And just a short while later did what most everyone in the gallery expected. He assigned the civil unions bill to a committee where it's almost certain to die. Addressing a gaggle of reporters on the House floor after that move, McNulty said civil unions, or gay marriage as he put it, was a distraction.
We ought not and we should not be spending time on divisive social issues when unemployment remains far too high, when far too many Coloradans are out of work, and when our focus should be on job creation and economic recovery.
It's not clear just how divisive the issue of civil unions is, though, with several Republicans in McNulty's own chamber voting for it last week, and more than a third of Republican delegates attending the party's recent state assembly saying they supported it. Those are stats not lost on the openly gay House Minority Leader Mark Ferrandino.
He might feel it's divisive, but in terms of outside this building, outside this chamber, it's not divisive. The vast majority of Coloradans support this bill.
Ferrandino said the special session could have been prevented had Republicans not staged a de facto filibuster last week that prevented a host of other bipartisan bills from passing. Those include funding for water projects and a driving while under the influence of marijuana bill that could still get passed this week. But most of the attention is on the civil unions bill. This morning, a couple hundred people chanted, "Let them vote," at a rally in support of it on the Capitol steps. But listening to speakers like Brad Clark of the group One Colorado, it was clear many knew its fate was all but certain.
And we will be back every session, every year, until our families are protected, until our children have the same ability to be protected under the law.
Gay rights activists, many Democrats, and some Republicans even have predicted the thorny fight over civil unions could hurt the GOP come November. But back inside the Capitol, House Speaker Frank McNulty doubted that to be the case. He said most Coloradans want to know how lawmakers will help them through the still-struggling economy.
Those are the things that we're going to be talking about heading into November. They're the things we're talking about now, and those are the issues that Coloradans are concerned about.
The special session is expected to last through Wednesday. For KUNC, I'm Kirk Sigler at the state capitol.
In a related story, over the weekend, many Coloradans received a robocall claiming that the special legislative session that began yesterday was diverting funds from economic recovery and instead spending them on this special session to pass civil unions. The Huffington Post reports that the call was paid for by conservative group Compass Colorado. In a press conference calling for the special session, Governor Hickenlooper responded, saying that although the special session costs $23,500 per day, the money was coming out of a fund of approximately $350,000 that was already allocated for this kind of session, and it was not costing taxpayers more money. U.S. Energy Corporation announced yesterday that it is in the process of developing a molybdenum deposit mine in Gunnison County, known as the Mount Emmons Project. As a result of several meetings held with interested local parties and numerous public officials, U.S. Energy also determined that it will consider a land exchange or similar process that would allow the conveyance of the patented and unpatented mining claims associated with the Mount Emmons Project to the United States in return for real property or other consideration. Colorado Senator Mark Udall released the following statement after U.S. Energy Corporation, Crested Butte, and local conservation groups made the announcement that they were open to a land exchange with the federal government. Udall said, quote, "I am committed to helping all interested parties reach an agreement to move forward that satisfies the needs of U.S. Energy and the community," end quote. Udall has been in discussions with U.S. Energy Corporation, Crested Butte, and conservation groups for more than a year on the Mount Emmons project. In rural Garfield County sits an ancient lake bed, the Piance Basin. It's already proven to be a rich source of natural gas, but another potential fuel source sits not too far below the surface. It's not oil, but a substance that could become oil under certain conditions. Methods used to unlock this fuel are controversial, and this area of Colorado is already wary of industry promises. As part of our continuing environmental coverage with KDNK in Carbondale, Aspen Public Radio's Luke Runyon reports.
Glenn Vodder has pulled his ruby red truck off the road next to a short rocky cliff.
So let's go on over there, kind of watch the traffic.
We're about halfway between Rifle and Meeker, just about to enter the heart of the Piance Basin.
Let me just see if I can't break open something here that will give you an idea.
He picks up a hefty stone, pulls it above his head, and...
watch yourself.
The yellow sandstone breaks open to reveal a dark, charcoal-colored center.
And this black that you see is the kerogen, which is a hydrocarbon material that's a precursor to petroleum.
Vodder's holding a small chunk of oil shale. In this rock is oil in a very premature state. The deposit this piece of rock came from would eventually become oil if it was, say, several thousand feet deeper and allowed to cook for millions of years. Instead, it's trapped in this rock.
That's why it's always been a challenge. You can't just get this stuff out easily. You've got to pump it. You can't pump it out.
It's a decades-old challenge, and one Vodder is intimately familiar with. He's worked in oil shale for decades. One older method to release the oil had miners digging out the rock, then processing it in large above-ground bins. They'd heat it to 900 degrees, and eventually oil came out of the rocks. Now companies are trying to cut out some middle steps and tap into the projected 10 billion barrels of oil in the Piance, currently trapped in rock. Vodder and I pull up to what looks like your average drill site. Pipes snake through each other, leading to industrial-looking structures. It's surrounded by a shiny new chain-link fence.
This is Glenn Vodder, here to see Roger. Thanks.
This is an experimental drill site deep in the Piance Basin. It's run by a company called American Shale Oil, or AMSO for short. AMSO's trying to figure out a way to heat the rock underground to about 600 degrees, release the oil, and pump it out.
Okay.
We pop inside a trailer to duck out of the wind to talk about one of the biggest concerns from environmental groups in oil shale development: contamination of groundwater. Aquifers are quite plentiful in the Piance Basin, but nearly all of the rich oil shale is under federal control, which comes with tight strictures on land use.
You know, we fail if we, you know, if we have impacts to the aquifer, and this company's dedicated to success.
That's Roger Day, AMSO's chief of operations. He's talking about the tenuous nature of this lease. Because it's just for research and development, not production of oil, if an aquifer is dirtied by drilling, the whole project would be in jeopardy. There's even larger concerns about developing oil shale in the Piance. Environmental groups, and for the most part the drillers themselves, admit this underground heating process is largely untested. And a different form of oil shale development back in the 1980s led to one of the biggest booms and busts in Colorado history, commonly referred to as Black Sunday.
If you look at the rhetoric regarding oil shale and the feasibility of oil shale back in the late 70s and early 80s, and look at the rhetoric now, the rhetoric is actually quite similar. That oil shale can and will be developed. That oil shale will result in lower energy prices, on and on and on.
David Abelson is the resident oil shale expert at Western Resource Advocates, a conservation group that specializes in energy issues. He says groups like his are wary of this experimental method of extracting oil. For one, he says there's no solid data on environmental impacts, and surrounding communities have seen oil shale cause devastation in local economies.
Whether or not you can have such a dramatic impact on a community the way that Black Sunday impacted the region for such a long period of time is an answer we actually don't want to find out.
Actually, answers are few to come by in oil shale, because its success hinges on a perfect nexus of factors. Oil prices need to remain high, The technology needs to be proven successful, the environment needs to be protected, and public support should be ample. And the Colorado School of Mines' Jerry Boak says it's going to be a while before all those criteria are met.
The larger companies involved in work in Colorado are willing to take the time to do this, to invest in making sure they're confident that they can move forward with it. And that's going to take some time.
Boak says given the fact researching this concept has only just begun, don't expect to see oil shale at the pump anytime soon. Some oil shale mining is moving along in Utah, but Boak says any commercial production using these new underground heating methods could be more than a decade away. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Luke Runyon.
Parental involvement is being credited with helping third graders hold the line on reading tests in Colorado this year. Students statewide tested nearly 74% proficient or advanced, up from 73% in 2011. The report comes from the Colorado Department of Education, which released preliminary results of the annual statewide third grade reading tests last Wednesday. According to the Denver Post, the third grade results are being released ahead of the rest of the standardized test scores because those results are considered crucial in determining a child's likelihood of success in school. This concludes the KVNF Morning Newscast. For KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio, I'm Eric Gould. Have a great day, and thanks for listening.